Word 45. Urbane. U-R-B-A-N-E. Polished. Sophisticated. Suave. Cosmopolitan. Urbane is related to the adjective urban, pertaining to or living in a city. Urbane suggests the polite, polished style of a sophisticated city dweller. The word may be used either of suave, socially refined behavior, or of expression that is polished and elegant. Mary's stunning designer dresses and witty, urbane conversation made her a popular guest at all the high society parties. Word 46. Jargon. J-A-R-G-O-N. Specialized and often pretentious language. Speech or writing that is highly technical and difficult to understand. Jargon refers especially to the specialized language or private vocabulary used and understood only by members of a particular group or profession. Medical jargon is the specialized vocabulary used by doctors. Computerese is the jargon or highly technical language of computer science. Legal jargon comprises the particular stock of Latin terms and complex phraseology used by lawyers. Jargon develops initially as a means for the members of a particular group to communicate precisely and efficiently. Its inevitable consequence, however, is to confuse and exclude those who are not members of the group and who are unfamiliar with the jargon. In current usage, therefore, jargon has come to mean any pretentious speech or writing that seems unnecessarily difficult to understand. Savvy business people know that using a lot of professional jargon will only alienate clients. Word 47. Prudent. P-R-U-D-E-N-T. Cautious. Careful. Planning wisely. Exercising sound judgment in practical matters. Synonyms include discreet, judicious, and circumspect. Prudent may also mean spending carefully, using one's resources wisely. Synonyms of prudent in this sense include thrifty, economical, and frugal. Prudent and circumspect both refer to people who proceed cautiously. Circumspect, spelled C-I-R-C-U-M-S-P-E-C-T, comes from the Latin circum, around, and specere, to look, observe. The circumspect person looks around carefully to make sure that no unforeseen circumstance will frustrate a plan of action. Prudent comes from the same Latin source as the verb to provide. Prudent people are concerned with protecting their personal interest and providing for a rainy day. They are characterized by their sound, careful judgment in handling practical matters, especially money. Word 48. Inviolable. I-N-V-I-O-L-A-B-L-E. Secure. Safe from assault, infringement, or destruction. Sacred. Untouchable, unassailable, incorruptible. Inviolable combines the prefix in, not, the suffix able, and the verb to violate, and means literally not able to be violated. An inviolable peace between nations cannot be broken or disrupted. An inviolable contract cannot be breached, altered, or revoked. An inviolable oath or promise is sacred, secure, incorruptible. Inviolable rights cannot be abused or taken away. They are safe from infringement or assault. An inviolable place cannot be violated or trespassed upon. It is safe, secure, unassailable. Word 49. Commodious. C-O-M M-O-D-I-O-U-S. Spacious, having plenty of room, comfortably convenient. Synonyms of commodious include ample and capacious. Commodious comes through French from the Latin commodus, convenience, suitability, the source also of commode, a euphemism for toilet that means literally something convenient or suitable. From the same Latin commodus, convenience, come the verb accommodate and the noun accommodations, sleeping quarters, lodging. If you find your accommodations accommodating, convenient, suitable to your needs, then chances are they are also commodious, spacious, roomy, comfortable, and convenient. Word 50. Proximity. Proximity. Nearness, closeness, the state of being in the vicinity of something. Proximity may be used either of persons or things to mean nearness in place, time, or relation. The proximity of their houses. The proximity of historic events. The proximity of two ideas. In modern society, marriage between first cousins is forbidden because of their proximity of blood relation. However, if you marry the girl or boy next door, it might be said that proximity was the deciding factor. You will often hear proximity used in the phrase close proximity. That is a redundancy. Proximity means closeness. Therefore, close proximity means close closeness. According to the American Heritage Dictionary, the expression close proximity says nothing that is not said by proximity itself. Usage tip: drop close and let proximity do its work alone.
Let's review the 10 keywords you've just learned, which are the last 10 words in Level 1. This time, I'm going to give you the review word, followed by three words or phrases, and you decide which of those three answer choices comes nearest the meaning of the review word. Let's begin. Does cantankerous mean stubborn, disagreeable, or violent? Cantankerous means disagreeable, argumentative, difficult to deal with. Does flippant mean disrespectful, outrageous, or peculiar? Flippant means disrespectful in a frivolous way, treating something serious in a trivial manner. Does subjugate mean to request, to calm down, or to conquer? Subjugate means to conquer, overwhelm completely, bring under rigid control. Does wry mean wrong, twisted, or painful? Wry means twisted or distorted in an odd, amusing way. Does urbane mean awkward, aloof, or sophisticated? Urbane means polished, sophisticated, suave, cosmopolitan. Does jargon refer to a humorous reply, a confusing remark, or a specialized vocabulary? Jargon is a specialized and often pretentious vocabulary, language that is highly technical and difficult to understand. Does prudent mean cautious and thrifty, stiff and formal, or hasty and thoughtless? Prudent means cautious, exercising careful judgment in practical matters, thrifty, spending carefully. Does inviolable mean secure, vague, or not allowed? Inviolable means secure, safe, not able to be violated. Does commodious mean appropriate, spacious, or friendly? Commodious means spacious, roomy, comfortably convenient. Does proximity mean relation, distance, or nearness. Proximity means nearness, closeness. That concludes the review for this section and for Level 1.
Let's wind up Level 1 with a word to the wise on the proper use of the verbs to lay and to lie. This lighthearted look at a grave grammatical pitfall is called Lie Down and I'll Lay It on You. Failure to distinguish between the verbs to lay and to lie is one of the most common errors among educated adults. It is a relatively simple distinction that is not hard to grasp, and once learned it becomes second nature. Furthermore, those who observe the difference have the distinct advantage of speaking properly and sounding perfectly natural at the same time. You will never be considered affected or pretentious for using these verbs correctly. Now, since this lay and lie lesson has been laid down countless times before, and since I would rather that you sit up and take note of what I am saying rather than lie down and go to sleep, I have composed an illustrative anecdote to once more give the lie to lay. I would like to say I was just lying around one day, but actually I was leaving a restaurant with some friends after laying down a generous tip. As we strolled toward our car, we passed a man barking at his dog, which in my experience happens rather more often than the other way around. "Lay down," the man said. The dog sat, his tongue lolling. "Lay down," said the man again, growing impatient. The dog continued to sit, looking curiously at his master. Overhearing this, one of my friends said, sotto voce, "Maybe if you told that dog to lie down, he might do what you want." Sotto voce, by the way, is a useful Italian phrase meaning under the breath, uttered in a soft voice so as not to be overheard. But back to our story. "Lay down," the dog's master said loudly, as if to silence my friend's criticism. Then, perhaps guilty for raising his voice in public, the man begged his pet, sotto voce, "Please, lay down." The plea fell upon large, floppy, obstinate ears. "Why won't you lay down?" the man groaned as my friends and I climbed into our car. The answer is, my friend was right. That dog was dead set against lying down for a master who didn't know how to lay down the law with good diction. The master may be the one blessed with the faculty of speech, but the dog was the better judge of what constitutes correct and intelligible English. Here's the difference. To lie means to rest, recline, be situated. You lie on a bed, rest there, recline on it. To lay means to put, place, set. You lay a book on a table, put or set it there. You lay your head on a pillow, place it on the pillow. Whatever you can put down, you can also lay down. You can lay something down, but you can't lay down. You can lie down, but you can't lie something down. That's simple, right? Now, here's where it gets a bit tricky. The past tense of lie is lay. Last night, I lay awake in bed. It is wrong to say that you laid in bed, because laid is the past tense of the verb to lay, which means to put, place. You wouldn't say, "Last night I put awake in bed," would you? Here's how the tenses break down for the verb to lay. You lay a book down today, you laid it down yesterday, and you have laid it down any time in the past. Here's how the tenses break down for the verb to lie. When you're tired, you lie down. When you were tired yesterday, you lay down. When you have been tired in the past, you have always lain down. Okay, here's a test. Which verb means to put, place, prepare? Lay. Which verb means to rest, recline, be situated? Lie. Good. Now for some hard ones. Do you lay something down or lie it down? You lay it down. On weekends, do you lay around the house or lie around the house? You lie around the house, of course. Were you laying in bed last night or lying in bed? You were lying in bed last night. If you were laying in bed last night, you are a chicken and your bed is full of eggs. Have you laid in bed before or have you lain there before? You have lain there before. Have you lain books on the sofa or have you laid them there? You have laid them there. Which sentence is correct? She lay the package down or she laid the package down? She laid the package down is correct. So, do you have a grasp on the difference? All right. Here's the final $64,000 question. Do you lay down on a bed or lie down on it? Well, if you're a dog, you'd better lie down on the rug if you know what's good for you. And with that dogged account of the distinction between lay and lie, we come to the end of Level 1. I hope you've enjoyed the material so far. If you found some of the keywords familiar, just keep listening, because there are 9 more challenging levels to come, each one chock full of useful information on hundreds of English words. By now, you should have established your listening and reviewing routine. I cannot overemphasize the fact that review is essential to ensure full comprehension and retention of what you've learned. For best results, I recommend that you spend at least 1 or 2 sessions listening to this entire level again before proceeding to Level 2, which begins with a discussion of the relationship between vocabulary building and reading. Welcome to Level 2 of Verbal Advantage. In the introduction to the program, I discussed the importance of building a powerful vocabulary. Now let's take a moment to talk about how powerful vocabularies are built. There are many ways to enrich your knowledge of words. You may have seen the Building Your Word Power feature that has been running for years in Reader's Digest magazine. Its vocabulary quizzes are fun, but unless you review the words several times and put them to work right away in your conversation and writing, the definitions are soon forgotten and you are back where you started. Moreover, the words are not presented in order of difficulty. They are a miscellaneous assortment, with easier words mixed in with more difficult ones. If you already know the easier words, testing you on them does nothing but flatter your ego. Likewise, if the harder words are beyond your vocabulary level, then your chances of retaining them are slim. In such a random quiz, designed for a mass audience, much of which, I would add, probably is not at a higher vocabulary level and is not accustomed to reading much more than Reader's Digest, it's doubtful that more than 2 or 3 of the words in each month's list will be challenging and useful to you. Not to mention that a month is a long time to wait to learn a handful of new words. So, what else can you do to improve your knowledge of words? You can always buy a book. There are many vocabulary building books on the market, and some of them are quite good. Keep in mind, however, that even the best of these books offer little or no instruction in usage and pronunciation, and the worst ones merely contain a list of words and definitions, in no particular order, with quizzes that do not test how well you've assimilated the vocabulary, but rather how well you learn by rote. Another option is to take a class or do what you're doing now, listening to this interactive program. Any disciplined and structured study of words is always more beneficial than casual exposure. On the other hand, many vocabulary building courses and programs don't live up to their hype. Too often they force-feed you a random selection of words and definitions that you must again learn by rote. That, I'm sure you will agree, is neither a pleasant nor an effective way to build your knowledge of words. And that is why Verbal Advantage introduces you to words in their order of difficulty, accompanied by specific information on where they come from, how they should be used, and how to avoid common errors of usage and pronunciation. But I still haven't told you the most effective way to build your vocabulary. Vocabulary building books and courses are an excellent start, but they cannot cover everything you need to know, and both must at some point come to an end. That is where the primary method of vocabulary building comes in. Have you guessed what it is? Reading. Simple, but oh so true. If you wish to continue to build your vocabulary after completing this program, in fact, if you want to retain the words you know right now, you must start reading more, reading widely, and reading something, even if just a few pages at first, every single day. That, of course, requires discipline. You need to set aside some time each day to read. An hour is great, but most of us have a hard time finding an hour when we can be undisturbed. You should be able to schedule 30 minutes, though, without too much trouble, and even 15 minutes of reading a day will help, provided you stick to it and choose your material with an eye toward building your knowledge of words. What should I read is the next question. Well, let's start with what you read now. Most Americans spend 15 or 20 minutes a day reading a newspaper. The newspaper is not the best place to find new words, simply because most are written at a 5th to 7th grade reading level. That is no accident, nor is it a comment on the inferior abilities of the nation's journalists. Newspapers must serve the general public, and the general public consists mostly of low vocabulary readers. However, some newspapers contain excellent writing. The New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Christian Science Monitor are particularly well written. Also, certain sections within any given newspaper are generally written better than others. For instance, in the editorial pages, you will read some of your paper's most talented writers and the syndicated columns of some of the finest journalists in the nation as well. Regardless of which newspaper you read, you will not do much for your vocabulary if you read only the sports section, the society page, the advice columns, or the funnies. If you're looking for interesting, useful words to add to your vocabulary, how about trying the theater, book, movie, and restaurant reviews? Many people also find the crossword puzzle a helpful vocabulary-building tool. Weekly news magazines such as Time, Newsweek, and U.S. News & World Report can also provide a nutritious diet of good writing and challenging words, as well as the added benefit of keeping you up to date without taking up a lot of your time. And while you're at it, be sure to note the headlines of all the articles you read. They can be a veritable gold mine of new words. Headline writers must find the shortest, sweetest way to capture the essence of a story, and often that means dredging up such stumpers as eschew, aver, impugn, distaff, and brute. Are you familiar with those words? Let's take a brief look at them. Eschew, E-S-C-H-E-W, means to avoid, shun, as to eschew alcohol. Aver, A-V-E-R, means to assert, declare, state positively, as to aver one's faith or innocence. Impugn, I-M-P-U-G-N, means to oppose in words, attack by argument, question or criticize the truth or integrity of, as to impugn authority or impugn someone's reputation. Distaff, D-I-S-T-A-F-F, means female, pertaining to women, as in the distaff side of a family, which is opposed to the spear side, the male line of descent. Finally, to brute, B-R-U-I-T, means to report widely, spread the word, as the scandal was bruited in the media. If you have a hobby or a particular area of interest outside of your occupation, you should subscribe to a publication that specializes in it. Articles on hunting, fishing, gardening, mechanics, parenting, cooking, antiques, travel, and a host of other subjects frequently contain uncommon words. For example, did you know that a stamp collector is called a philatelist? Philatelist begins with PH. A coin collector is a numismatist. And the word for a magician who specializes in sleight of hand is prestidigitator. You want to know how to spell prestidigitator? Hang on, it's a long one. P-R-E-S-T-I-D-I-G-I-T-A-T-O-R. In an article on exercise in a health magazine, you might run across a medical term like pulmonary, pertaining to the lungs, or vascular, pertaining to the blood vessels. In magazines specializing in food and wine, you may find such delicious words as gastronome, a lover and connoisseur of fine food, indigenous, belonging or native to a particular country or region, and sommelier, S-O-M-M-E-L-I-E-R, the wine steward in a restaurant. Recently, I read an article on the 19th century French painter Edgar Degas, D-E-G-A-S. It was published in a national fashion magazine that does not have a reputation for catering to a high vocabulary audience. In just the first two pages, however, I found the following high vocabulary words: vignette, a literary sketch, short composition; redolent, which means exuding a fragrance, aromatic; simian, which means pertaining to or resembling an ape; libido, which means sexual drive; misogyny, which means hatred of women; salacious, which means arousing sexual desire; assiduous, which means careful and persistent; and ennui, E-N-N-U-I, which means boredom or a state of weary dissatisfaction. The point is, interesting, challenging, and useful words are everywhere in your everyday reading if you want to find them. The key is to keep your eyes and ears open and don't let any of them slip by. So whenever you read, make a conscious effort to look for words you don't know, and keep a dictionary handy while you're reading so you can look them up right away. If you can't always read with a dictionary beside you, then highlight or underline the unfamiliar words in your reading, or dog-ear the pages on which they occur so you can look up the words later. Reading with an eye for words you don't know and reading with a dictionary are the two best ways you can continue to enrich your vocabulary after you complete the Verbal Advantage program.
To continue with Level 2, Word 1, please fast forward the tape and go to Side 5.